Chapter 147. Two places vacated, set down by the omnibus at the corner of St. Mary Axe, and trusting to her feet and her crutch stick within its precincts, the doll's dressmaker proceeded to the place of business of Pupsy and Company. All there was sunny and quiet externally, and shady and quiet internally. Hiding herself in the entry outside the glass door, she could see from that post of observation the old man in his spectacles sitting writing at his desk. "Bo!" " cried the dressmaker, popping in her head at the glass door. "Mr. Wolf at home?" " The old man took his glasses off, and mildly laid them down beside him. "Ah, Jenny, is it you? I thought you had given me up." And so I had given up the treacherous wolf of the forest, " she replied. "But, godmother, it strikes me, you have come back. I am not quite sure, because the wolf and you changed forms. I want to ask you a question or two, to find out whether you are really godmother or really wolf. May I? Yes, Jenny, yes. But Raya glanced towards the door, as if he thought his principal might appear there, unseasonably. "If you're afraid of the fox," said Miss Jenny, "you may dismiss all present expectations of seeing that animal. He won't show himself abroad for many a day." "What do you mean, my child?"
"I mean, godmother," replied Miss Wren, sitting down beside the Jew, "that the fox has caught a famous flogging, and that if his skin and bones are not tingling, aching, and smarting at this present instant, no fox did ever tingle, ache, and smart." Therewith Miss Jenny related what had come to pass in the Albany, omitting the few grains of pepper. "Now, godmother," she went on, "I particularly wish to ask you what has taken place here since I left the wolf here, because I have an idea about the size of a marble rolling about in my little noddle. First and foremost, are you Pupsy and Company, or are you either? Upon your solemn word and honor." The old man shook his head. "Secondly, isn't Fledgeby both Pupsy and Company?" The old man answered with a reluctant nod. "My idea," exclaimed Miss Wren, "is now about the size of an orange. But before it gets any bigger, welcome back, dear godmother." The little creature folded her arms about the old man's neck with great earnestness, and kissed him. "I humbly beg your forgiveness, godmother. I am truly sorry. I ought to have had more faith in you. But what could I suppose when you said nothing for yourself, you know? I don't mean to offer that as a justification, but what could I suppose when you were a silent party to all he said? It did look bad. Now didn't it?" "It looked so bad, Jenny," responded the old man, with gravity, "that I will straightway tell you what an impression it wrought upon me. I was hateful in mine own eyes. I was hateful to myself, in being so hateful to the debtor and to you. But more than that, and worse than that, and to pass out far and broad beyond myself, I reflected that evening, sitting alone in my garden on the housetop, that I was doing dishonor to my ancient faith and race. I clearly reflected for the first time that in bending my neck to the yoke I was willing to wear, I bent the unwilling necks of the whole Jewish people. For it is not, in Christian countries, with the Jews, as with other peoples. Men say, this is a bad Greek, but there are good Greeks. This is a bad Turk, but there are good Turks. Not so with the Jews. Men find the bad among us easily enough. Among what peoples are the bad not easily found? But they take the worst of us as samples of the best. They take the lowest of us as presentations of the highest. And they say all Jews are alike. If, doing what I was content to do here, because I was grateful for the past, and have small need of money now, I had been a Christian, I could have done it, compromising no one but my individual self. But doing it as a Jew, I could not choose but compromise the Jews of all conditions and all countries. It is a little hard upon us, but it is the truth. I would that all our people remembered it. Though I have little right to say so, seeing that it came home so late to me. Apostrophe, the doll's dressmaker sat holding the old man by the hand, and looking thoughtfully in his face. Thus I reflected, I say, sitting that evening in my garden on the housetop, and passing the painful scene of that day in review before me many times, I always saw that the poor gentleman believed the story readily, because I was one of the Jews, that you believed the story readily, my child, because I was one of the Jews, that the story itself first came into the invention of the originator thereof, because I was one of the Jews. This was the result of my having had you three before me, face to face, and seeing the thing visibly presented, as upon a theater. Wherefore I perceived that the obligation was upon me to leave this service. But Jenny, my dear, apostrophe said Raya, breaking off, I promised that you should pursue your questions, and I obstruct them. Apostrophe, on the contrary, godmother. My idea is as large now as a pumpkin, and you know what a pumpkin is, don't you? So you gave notice that you were going? Does that come next? Apostrophe asked Miss Jenny with a look of close attention. I ended a letter to my master. Yes. To that effect. Apostrophe, and what said tingling, tossing, aching, screaming, scratching, smarter? Apostrophe asked Miss Wren with an unspeakable enjoyment in the utterance of those honorable titles and in the recollection of the pepper. He held me to certain months of servitude, which were his lawful term of notice. They expire tomorrow. Upon their expiration, not before I had meant to set myself right with my Cinderella. Apostrophe, my idea is getting so immense now, apostrophe cried Miss Wren, clasping her temples, that my head won't hold it. Listen, godmother, I am going to expound. Little eyes that screaming, scratching, smarter, owes you a heavy grudge for going. Little eyes casts about how best to pay you off. Little eyes thinks of Lizzie. Little eyes says to himself, I'll find out where he has placed that girl, and I'll betray his secret, because it's dear to him. Apostrophe perhaps little eyes thinks, I'll make love to her myself too, but that I can't swear all the rest I can. So, little eyes comes to me, and I go to little eyes. That's the way of it. And now the murder's all out, I'm sorry, apostrophe added the doll's dressmaker, rigid from head to foot with energy as she shook her little fist before her eyes, that I didn't give him cayenne pepper and chopped pickled capsicum. Apostrophe, this expression of regret being but partially intelligible to Mr. Raya, the old man reverted to the injuries Fledgeby had received, and hinted at the necessity of his at once going to tend that beaten cur. Godmother, godmother, godmother! Apostrophe, cried Miss Wren irritably, I really lose all patience with you. One would think you believed in the Good Samaritan. How can you be so inconsistent? Apostrophe, Jenny dear, apostrophe began the old man gently, it is the custom of our people to help apostrophe, oh, bother your people. Apostrophe interposed Miss Wren, with a toss of her head. If your people don't know better than to go and help little eyes, it's a pity they ever got out of Egypt. Over and above that, apostrophe she added, he wouldn't take your help if you offered it. Too much ashamed. Wants to keep it close and quiet, and to keep you out of the way. Apostrophe, they were still debating this point, when a shadow darkened the entry, and the glass door was opened by a messenger who brought a letter unceremoniously addressed, Raya. Apostrophe, to which he said there was an answer wanted. The letter, which was scrawled in pencil uphill and downhill and round crooked corners, ran thus. Old Raya, your accounts being all squared, go. Shut up the place, turn out directly, and send me the key by bearer. Go. You are an unthankful dog of a Jew. Get out. F'. The doll's dressmaker found it delicious to trace the screaming and smarting of little eyes in the distorted writing of this epistle. She laughed over it, and jeered at it in a convenient corner, to the great astonishment of the messenger, while the old man got his few goods together in a black bag. That done, the shutters of the upper windows closed, and the office blind pulled down, they issued forth upon the steps with the attendant messenger. There, while Miss Jenny held the bag, the old man locked the house door, and handed over the key to him, who at once retired with the same. "Well, godmother," said Miss Wren, as they remained upon the steps together, looking at one another. "And so you're thrown upon the world?" It would appear so, Jenny, and somewhat suddenly. Where are you going to seek your fortune? Asked Miss Wren. The old man smiled, but looked about him with a look of having lost his way in life, which did not escape the doll's dressmaker. "Verily, Jenny," said he, "the question is to the purpose, and more easily asked than answered. But as I have experience of the ready goodwill, and good help of those who have given occupation to Lizzie, I think I will seek them out for myself." "On foot?" asked Miss Wren, with a chop. "Eh?" said the old man. "Have I not my staff?" It was exactly because he had his staff, and presented so quaint an aspect, that she mistrusted his making the journey. "The best thing you can do," said Jenny, "for the time being, at all events, is to come home with me, godmother. Nobody's there but my bad child, and Lizzie's lodging stands empty." The old man, when satisfied that no inconvenience could be entailed on anyone by his compliance, readily complied, and the singularly assorted couple once more went through the streets together. Now, the bad child having been strictly charged by his parent to remain at home in her absence, of course went out, and, being in the very last stage of mental decrepitude, went out with two objects. Firstly, to establish a claim he conceived himself to have upon any licensed victualler living, to be supplied with threepenny worth of rum for nothing, and secondly, to bestow some maudlin remorse on Mr. Eugene Rayburn, and see what profit came of it. Stumblingly pursuing these two designs, they both meant rum, the only meaning of which he was capable, the degraded creature staggered into Covent Garden Market and there bivouacked, to have an attack of the trembles succeeded by an attack of the horrors, in a doorway. This market of Covent Garden was quite out of the creature's line of road, but it had the attraction for him which it has for the worst of the solitary members of the drunken tribe. It may be the companionship of the nightly stir, or it may be the companionship of the gin and beer that slop about among carters and hucksters, or it may be the companionship of the trodden vegetable refuse which is so like their own dress that perhaps they take the market for a great wardrobe. But be it what it may, you shall see no such individual drunkards on doorsteps anywhere as there. Of dozing women drunkards especially, you shall come upon such specimens there, in the morning sunlight, as you might seek out of doors in vain through London. Such stale vapid rejected cabbage leaf and cabbage stalk dress, such damaged orange countenance, such squashed pulp of humanity, are open to the day nowhere else. So, the attraction of the market drew Mr. Dolls to it, and he had out his two fits of trembles and horrors in a doorway on which a woman had had out her sodden nap a few hours before. There is a swarm of young savages always flitting about this same place, creeping off with fragments of orange chests, and moldy litter heaven knows into what holes they can convey them, having no home, whose bare feet fall with a blunt dull softness on the pavement as the policeman hunts them, and who are, perhaps for that reason, little heard by the powers that be, whereas in top boots they would make a deafening clatter. These, delighting in the trembles and the horrors of Mr. Dolls, as in a gratuitous drama, flocked about him in his doorway, butted at him, leaped at him, and pelted him. Hence, when he came out of his invalid retirement, and shook off that ragged train, he was much bespattered, and in worse case than ever. But, not yet at his worst, 4. Going into a public house, and being supplied in stress of business with his rum, and seeking to vanish without payment, he was collared, searched, found penniless, and admonished not to try that again, by having a pail of dirty water cast over him. This application superinduced another fit of the trembles, after which Mr. Dawes, as finding himself in good cue for making a call on a professional friend, addressed himself to the temple. There was nobody at the chambers but young Blight. That discreet youth, sensible of a certain incongruity in the association of such a client with the business that might be coming someday, with the best intentions temporized with Dawes, and offered a shilling for coach hire home. Mr. Dawes, accepting the shilling, promptly laid it out in 2 threepennyworths of conspiracy against his life, and 2 threepennyworths of raging repentance. Returning to the chambers with which burden, he was descried coming round into the court, by the wary young Blight watching from the window, who instantly closed the outer door, and left the miserable object, to expend his fury on the panels. The more the door resisted him, the more dangerous and imminent became that bloody conspiracy against his life. Force of police arriving, he recognized in them the conspirators, and laid about him hoarsely, fiercely, staringly, convulsively, foamingly. A humble machine, familiar to the conspirators and called by the expressive name of stretcher, being unavoidably sent for, he was rendered a harmless bundle of torn rags by being strapped down upon it, with voice and consciousness gone out of him, and life fast going. As this machine was borne out at the temple gate by 4 men, the poor little doll's dressmaker and her Jewish friend were coming up the street. "Let us see what it is," apostrophe cried the dressmaker. "Let us make haste and look, godmother." Apostrophe, the brisk little crutch stick was but too brisk. "Oh, gentlemen, gentlemen, he belongs to me." Apostrophe, apostrophe, belongs to you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the head of the party, stopping it. "Oh yes, dear gentlemen, he's my child, out without leave. My poor bad bad boy. And he don't know me, he don't know me. Oh, what shall I do?" apostrophe cried the little creature, wildly beating her hands together, "when my own child don't know me." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the head of the party looked, as well he might, to the old man for explanation. He whispered, as the doll's dressmaker bent over the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.